are now going to listen to KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay.
For more than 50 years, Nikki Giovanni's poetry has dazzled and inspired readers. As sharp and outspoken as ever, she has published a new book of poetry and prose, Make Me Rain. In Make Me Rain, she calls attention to injustice and racism, celebrates Black culture and Black lives, and gives readers an unfiltered look into her own experiences. In our wide-ranging interview, Giovanni read some of her poetry, discussed an amazing conversation she had with James Baldwin in 1971 that was taped for the public TV show Soul, and weighed in on having front porch conversations versus interaction over the internet. Nikki Giovanni gained initial fame in the late 1960s as one of the foremost authors of the Black Arts Movement. Influenced by the Civil Rights Movement and Black Power Movement of the period, her early work provides a strong, militant African-American perspective, leading one writer to dub her the poet of the Black Revolution. A seven-time NAACP Amateur Award winner, Giovanni is the author of 28 books and the University Distinguished Professor of English at Virginia Tech University. Nikki Giovanni, welcome to KAZI Book Review.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It is such an honor to have you on the show. And it's such an honor because I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and I remember you. And I remember your passionate advocacy for the Black community. I remember your Black militancy, your poems. I saw your debate or interview with James Baldwin from 1971. So this is just quite an honor for me.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Now, that was quite wonderful. And it was a conversation, actually.
I know. And it was interesting. You were 28. And I think he was in his 50s.
He was about 28, 30.
Almost 50?
Yeah,
he was almost there. And so I thought it was so good to have this intergenerational discussion.
Right.
Because I think that's one of the things that we don't get enough of today. Young activists talking to old experienced activists. And I remember how in the interview, James Baldwin would say, well, just, you know, I've been around a little while, Nikki, let me tell you a little bit based on my experiences. And you took it well.
No. I mean, you learn. I think as a part of the other side now, I did an interview or conversation recently with Rhapsody, and she's a young rapper. And we had that same 20-year gap. And it was really wonderful. And she was saying, well, what do you think, you know, we should learn? I said, I think my generation should learn to listen.
I'm 60 years old, so I'm right behind you.
Yes. I think that's what we, you know, everybody always wants to tell other people what to do. But what you should do sometimes is listen and see what the kids want. And I say kids, but what the younger people are interested in, what they're trying to get done. And to appreciate their not their efforts, because they're doing Black Lives Matter is just incredible. They just do a great job, and they've organized actually the planet. Any place you go now, you know, I couldn't believe Perth, Australia. I just couldn't believe Perth, Australia was marching with Black Lives Matter on the death of George Floyd. That is so wonderful.
I know. And I interviewed an author in Scotland a couple of months ago, and we had a discussion about Black Lives Matter and what was going on in the United States. So it's an amazing global movement. But I also recall an interview with James Baldwin. You were focused on America.
Right. Well, that's true. And, you know, you learn. I'm still pretty much focused on America. I'm so pleased that we've gotten rid of Donald Trump and his gang, and I think that we have America has a chance now, and I wish as well.
So let's open with you reading your first poem in your book, Make Me Rain.
Okay, it's a love poem. I love it so much. Make me rain, turn me into a snowflake. Let me rest on your tongue. Make me a piece of ice so I can cool you. Let me be the cloud that embraces you. Or the quilt that gets you dry. Snuggle close. Listen to me sing on the windowsill. Make me rain on you. And I love that. All poets write love poems. And I'm a poet, so I write love poems. But I love it as a love poem because we forget that rain does everything. You cannot, earth, well, life cannot exist without water. And so again, I came back to Make Me Rain, and the book is a shout out actually to my cover is a shout out to Marvin Gaye. And you remember Marvin?
Yeah. Yes. Is that from What's Going On?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the same as What's Going On cover. Yes.
Yeah. I just, you know, I'm sorry he's not here. I'm sorry I didn't know Mr. Gaye, but I wanted to do a shout out to what he had done, because What's Going On was an incredible album, is an incredible album. And I was so pleased to see that Rolling Stone finally recognized that it was the number one album of the decade. But what Marvin did with What's Going On, of course, we could do it right now. We could play that right now. And you would say, oh, Mr. Gaye wrote that yesterday. It's fabulous.
I mean, when you look at what's happening today, it almost seems like the cycles of history are repeating itself. And what is it? He who does not remember his past is condemned to repeat it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I swear I would never have thought that the fragility of our democracy, I mean, what we're talking about is democracy that is so fragile that this type of leader could have such an outsized influence on bringing out the worst in the people, certain folk.
Yeah, you know, we had Hitler, we had Mussolini, we had a coward like Chamberlain. You know, the Brits said, and the Brits have to be so embarrassed about Chamberlain. But we've had fools before. And one of the things that it's just kind of fun to me that I get to laugh at, you know, what happened when Donald Trump lost this election was that they had to wake up in the morning. They went to bed last night being white, and they had to wake up in the morning being American. So it's something they'll get used to.
Wow. If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Nikki Giovanni. We are talking about her latest book, Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose. Now, this book is quite a kaleidoscope of things. There are personal poems, poems dedicated to individual people. There are activist poems. There's poems that touch on religion. There's prose. You shout out to Beyonce. You call out Bill Cosby for what he is. I mean, this book is just such, it's just such a remarkable book to me. And let me tell you specifically, one of the things about your book was how it made me feel nostalgic for the time when we sat on porches.
Yeah.
And there's a part in the book where you talk about the time when we used to sit on porches and have those conversations. And I think of today that the internet and social media, how do you look at that today? Are those, in your mind, the new porches of today, or are they not the same as the porches where we had the individual physical discussions in front of each other physically?
Well, I'm actually upset, not upset like that, but I wish that we didn't have decks, because when we had a porch, people walked by. I lived with my grandparents, and my grandfather taught Latin in high school. And people would walk by and say, evening, Professor Watson, evening, Professor Watson. And my grandmother and whomever was walking by would gossip or change expressions. But with the deck, and I'm not, you know, but with the deck, you're by yourself. You're in the back. The good part about what we're doing, what you and I are doing here, what the computer has done, is that you don't have to be homeless anymore. You don't have to have a home, and a lot of people don't, no matter what anybody deals with in America. We have homelessness, and we have people without jobs. But you can go in, when we can go in again, into a library, and you have a home, so you can talk to people. And that's what makes a computer good. But I miss the porch, because you had the person, and you talk to the person. How you doing today? And they would talk back. And I think that front porches were incredibly wonderful, because it helped make a community.
Well,
also, for 2 seconds, someone asked me recently, if I may, if I got to be president, don't laugh, okay? Don't laugh. But say, Nikki, if you got to be president, what's the first thing you would do? And I said, well, to tell you the truth, the first thing I would do is outlaw golf. Don't you think that's the dumbest damn thing in the world? Don't you really? I'd get rid of golf.
It's a game of the elite.
It's a game that you lie about. People go out there and then you have to have money to join the club, which you don't. You actually get your tax cut off for that, run off for that. And you lie about what your score is and stuff. It's stupid. True. And so that would be the first thing that I really would get rid of. Then there's some other things I might do, but I'd outlaw golf and let the chipmunks come back and let the squirrels come back and let the deer. I live on a mountain, and let the deer come back and they don't have to worry about, you know, four and the deer. I'm sure the deer is teaching their children. Mother deer is teaching their children. Now, when you hear four, duck, because those fools are going to send a ball your way. You know? So. Right.
Well, fortunately, I don't play golf. Good. I never took to it.
I don't.
I never took to it. Growing up in the housing project in New Orleans, it was mostly basketball. Certainly. On the asphalt courts of New Orleans.
That's a community game.
Yes.
And girls, you know, you're a boy. And so you would go out and take your shirt off and show off and sweat a little bit. And the girls would say, ooh, look at that chest. And eventually they would. And eventually, you know, we who are girls, I'm not good at basketball. I played a little tennis, but these are sports that people can be with you on. And I think that's more important.
You have a poem or you have an essay about being from a family of athletes.
Mm-hmm. I come from athletes.
Your mother was a tennis player, right?
Mommy was a tennis player. And mommy at one point played during the age of segregation. The black people played their tennis tournament in Wilberforce, Ohio. I don't know if you know Wilberforce.
Yes, I've heard of it. Yes.
Okay. Wilberforce, Ohio. And mommy actually made it to the semifinals and she played Althea Gibson. Now, Miss Gibson, of course, beat mommy. I mean, she's Althea Gibson and my mother's not. But mommy was so pleased. She has a trophy. And I was she was very happy about that, and I was. But my father played basketball. He's from Mobile, Alabama. And the reason that he got to go to college was he was a basketball player. And daddy sent a photograph of himself to mommy. When they were, I guess, dating or something.
You're getting was it a knot? Yeah, you're about to get naughty now, right?
It took me the longest to realize that it was. And it's just a picture of him holding a ball. And it says, think I'll score. And it took me the longest to realize that was a metaphor. He wasn't talking about a basket.
Well, that's a hilarious story, man. I tell you. Could you read the poem When the Music Stopped?
I can. Now I'm going to have to look for it because I hadn't.
Take your time. We can edit out you looking for the poem. Not a problem.
Okay. Are you looking at it for
page 78?
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't usually remember my poems, and it's a good thing. I tell my students that. It's good not to remember. So you can make a mistake.
Yes.
If you remember everything, then you're afraid of making a mistake. So I don't. This is a religious poem, of course. When the music stopped, the man on the right ridiculed him. The man on the left believed. He had nothing else to do but hum a song, which the Romans, when the Romans heard, stop, cut him down, and let his mother and the beloved disciple take him to the tomb. On Sunday, of course, it was Easter. He had gone to Mars. Earth did not deserve him. And I read that poorly, and I'm sorry, but this is a new book, and I have to get used to reading it a little better. But
sure.
If you recall, when Jesus was on the cross, when the music stopped, the Roman soldier who was there at the bottom, there was only three people at his cross. And that was his mother, Mary, and the beloved disciple, John, and the Roman who was there to whenever the Roman called him dead. When the music stopped, the Roman knew that he was gone. And I really wanted that. I'm just a Christian, but I'm not trying to be a preacher or something. But I wanted to point out, you know, while you're waiting for your life, you have to have music. And I think the most incredible people on earth are Black Americans, because for the 200 years that we were enslaved, and I've written a lot about it for whatever a poet like me means, but for the 200 years that we were enslaved, we created the spirituals. And on the back of the spirituals came jazz, came gospel, came blues, came rhythm and blues, came everything. All of the music of America is on the back of the spirituals. So if the music stops, and we all have to hope it doesn't, then we'll know that America's finished.
And I think at some point you say it starts with the moans on the ships.
Yeah, because they didn't speak English. You have to realize that the Africans who were being bought and sold did not have a common language any more than the Europeans. Nobody speaks of Europeans. We speak of Germans, and we speak of, you know, Polish, and we speak of Russian, we speak of British, Spanish, Portuguese. But we always talk about Africans as if they were one language, and it wasn't. The only way they could talk to each other, and I always give women credit for that, and I mean no disrespect to the men, but it's the kind of thing that women do. When we're on that ship, and it is clear that we have lost, we have to find a way to communicate. And it's going to be the women. It's going to be your grandmother. If whatever you've gone through in life, if you've got a grandmother, it's going to work. And so this woman underneath is going to have to try to find a way to say to her people, we're going to make this through. We're going to be all right. And what she did is what any mother or grandmother does. She started to moan. And that moan is going to be picked up. And we're going to change the language, because there was no language here in what is going to ultimately be America. We're going to change the language because somebody has to talk to us, and we have to talk to somebody. But I can always see that woman trying to comfort her people, knowing that it's not going to be good, but we're going to get through it. We're going to make it through.
Lemonade grows from soil. And yeah, that was an amazing, should I call it an essay or just prose? How should I describe it? Because you reference Paul Laurence Dunbar, County Cullen, Beyonce, Hitler. I mean, you're traveling through history, and I didn't realize you have a history degree from Fisk University. I only learned that from watching your interview of James Baldwin.
James Baldwin. I love that poem. First of all, I'm a Beyonce fan, and I didn't get to know who Beyonce was. I was in London, and I don't know how to ride subways. I lived in New York for 20 years and never rode a subway in New York, but the London subways are a lot more interesting. So I was walking down trying to get to the subway so I can get to Mayfair, and there's this picture. And I thought, who is that? And it was Beyonce. And then I wanted to hear, what did she have to say? I think she's a great kid. And I was invited to be a part of that lemonade album that she did. Now, being me, I never do what anybody ever expects. So I wanted to do what I did here, which is Lemonade is Made from Soil. I've been fortunate that I'm now working once again with Beyonce, because I like the idea of the generations working together. And I like what she's done, because I think that she's forward looking. I think she's an honest woman. And I've been very upset with people like Ice Cube, because I think that Cube was a fool to be up there trying to get Donald Trump to listen to him, or Kanye West, Kanye West needs to be hospitalized. We all know that he's a sick man. And so when you start to look at where is the music going, we can look at young ladies like Rhapsody, young ladies like Beyonce, and try to figure out how you can not just support it, but they don't need my support. They're already stars. But to be a part of what they're doing and to appreciate what they're doing. And I really, Lemonade Grows from Soil is one of my favorite. I don't know what we call it. I do know that the generation that's going to write after I do, I mean, there are people writing now. And I know that generation has the ability to put anything they want in a book. And I think that they owe me. I'm going to be in old folks' home, and I want them to stop by, you know, and they say, you know, Grandma Nick, you know, thank you so much for putting that poem in there and putting that essay in there and making the publishing company, the publishing world, recognize that you can, it's all a stew. It's all a quilt. You can put many things together. It doesn't have to be a novel. It doesn't have to be just a play. It doesn't have to be only one thing. It can be a lot. And we poets lead the way. So I'm very proud. And thank you for that. I'm very proud of the books that I've been able to publish lately, probably just because people have been very kind to me. But I've been able to show that you don't have to be one thing. You can be what you are. And I think that, I think they owe me. So I think they ought to come by the old folks' home and bring me a bottle of champagne. And then I think they ought to say thanks. So.
You have somewhere else in the book where you talk about we don't need the people that sold us to like us. We don't need the people that purchased us to like us. We need to like ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting, sort of centering us here in America as African Americans, as Black Americans, and to really focus on ourselves as opposed to the others.
I think that's a definite, you know, Toni Morrison, who was a friend, and we all miss Toni. But Toni Morrison had a job, cleaning house. You know, she was up there right outside of Toledo. She was in Lorraine, and she had a job cleaning house. And it's in one of her essays. It's not a part of her novels. And she had a job cleaning house. And she came home one day, and she was upset. And she said to her father, "You know, they don't like me. They talk about me. They make me feel bad." And her father looked at her and said, "Take your money and come home. They're not supposed to like you." And I thought that is an incredible thing to remind people. You love who you love and who loves you. And the rest of the people you have to let go. You know, I really hope that Joe Biden understands that he doesn't owe those 70,000 or 70 million or whatever. He doesn't owe those people anything. He owes the Black American community. He owes the immigrant community. He owes the brown community, because we're the people that came out and voted him in. And that's who you have to listen to, because those people will never like him. They're on their motorcycles. They're fat. They're crazy. They've got tattoos all over the place, which is fine. I have a tattoo.
Wait, doesn't your tattoo say Thug Life?
Yes, ma'am. It says Thug Life. Of course it does. Right there. And I got that because I can't imagine. I have a son, and my son was only, or is, however you would put it, only a year older than Tupac. And when Tupac was murdered, I thought it was the saddest. I couldn't imagine how Effie, I just couldn't imagine how she could feel about how she was going to get through. And I couldn't sing. So all I could do, and I wondered, okay, what can I do to let her know that she's not alone, that we care, and I'm not the only person who cared. But I said to my mother, I was living with my mother. I wrote a poem for mommy. It's called "I Married My Mother" while I did. But I said to mommy, you know, it made me so sad. I said, I think I should get a tattoo. I think that's what I should do, just to let her finish, if she ever knows I have one, for whatever that would mean. And my mother was, just a middle-class Negro. So she was like, you know, and I said, I think what I'll do is I think I'll have it run down the side of my head. And I could actually see her brain going, how can I make this crazy child of mine not do this? And she finally said, "Oh," she said, "you know, Nick, I see your point, but if you put it down the side of your face, you won't be able to see it. You know, other people, but you won't." And I said, "Oh, you're right. So I'll have to put it on my arm." And there was nothing she could do. I said, "Well, okay, you put it on your arm." So I had, I put Thug Life. But the funny thing is, I went down, you know, I live in Appalachia. And so I went to the tattoo parlor, and I'm the only woman, as you know, I'm the only old woman there. And then I'm also actually the only Black person. So when I walk in, it just became quiet. Everybody turned around and looked at me. And so I'm just, "Good evening. I'd like a tattoo, please." And so the owner's named Alex. And so Alex came out and he said, Well, there's, because it's got walls from, you said there's one on the walls. I said, well, I want Thug Life. And you could hear everybody go, and Alex looked at me and he said, you don't look like a thug. And I said, yes, I'm a thug. And he had to design this, and that's how he got it. I'm a thug. I'm always going to be with the thugs. And if that hadn't happened, if Pac was still with us, I would put Black Lives Matter. I only have one tattoo because I think one is enough. But if Pac was still here, I wouldn't have Thug Life. I would have Black Lives Matter, because you want people to know this is where I stand. I stand with the people.
If you're just joining us,
I'm Rain. Mm-hmm.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KAZI Book Review on KAZI 88.7 FM. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guest is Nikki Giovanni. We're talking about her latest book, Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose. Now, you also say in your We Write, you talk about Black ink and Black male, and Black Lives Matter needs Black ink. So you are talking about the importance of Black writers.
I think every voice needs to be raised. And it's one reason that I'm so very, very proud of this election that we just had. You have to raise your voice, because that's all we have. All I have are words. I'm not that big. I can't sing, and I'm not going to sing to prove to you that I can't. I don't know how to dance. I'm a baby sister. My older sister could play the piano. She could do a lot of things. I can't do anything, but I could watch, and I do. I still watch. Till the day I die, I'll be watching. And I could watch, and in watching, I make some decisions about what's right and what's not. And I always, to the best of my ability, want to be on the side of what's right. And the people are right. So it's a pleasure to feel like for just this one voice, for just this one word. And I say that to my students. I'm still teaching. And I love teaching. And I'm saying to them, when you're looking at your poetry, your writing, is that where the word belongs? That's the question you have to ask, because you're your first audience. Anybody out here who's listening to us right now who says, I want to write. I'm thinking about writing. I wonder what I should do. The first thing you should do is remember, you are your first audience. So the first person who reads your poem is going to be you. And you have to ask yourself, does that word belong there?
Mm. So let's close with a poem.
Oh, okay.
Now, I have many that I could recommend, but is there one you would like to close with?
I would like to close with In the Evening, because I learned so much from my grandparents, from sitting in the evening with them. There's a lot I write about my grandparents in this book because they're wonderful. But this is In the Evening, because they would go and sit on the front porch. I had to wash dishes and I didn't mind because I ate, but they would sit on the front porch in the evening. And actually there's another poem in here, it's called In Silence, and they would sit in silence. So I learned a lot about love from my grandparents sitting in silence, but I wanted to read In the Evening. But in the evening, when the sun seeks rest, I evaporate. I become its wind and remind us of the songs that tell the history of the comfort and the love so that we can show the children. And I think that's what we do, these songs, and you go to church on Sunday, and these are the songs showing the history. And I just think that it's so important, because a lot of what all of us know, we know through the music. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. Every round goes higher and higher. And it just makes you, you know, you're having a bad day and you think, come on, I'm climbing Jacob's ladder. You know, pull on up, girl. You got something, you got work to do, you know. And the spirituals are so wonderful in that. But I like that, because the book is Make Me Rain. But I wanted to point out, yeah, it can make me rain, or I can be rain, but I am going to evaporate. And when I do, I'm going to become something else that will help somebody know something else, I hope.
If this interview had been done in October and would run in October, my guess would have been, you have to read the poem Vote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to vote, yeah. Fannie Lou Hamer, I said a long time ago that if there was only a part of me, what little bit I know, and you'd have to choose my phone, as far as I know about biology, and I'm not good at biology, but what I know about biology is that the liver is the last thing to go. And I've always said to my son and to my friends and anybody else, when I go, if all that is left of me is my liver, take that to the polling place and let my liver vote. Because Fannie Lou Hamer took an incredible beating so that I could vote. And I wrote that poem just looking at a lot of things. It's not the sunshine, it's not a cake, it's not a cookie, it's a vote. And voting is so important because people try to say, it doesn't matter what you think. Well, if it didn't matter, then why do you care? Of course you care, because it does matter. And I love vote because you have to vote. Fannie Lou Hamer was a great old gal, and I just couldn't, as I say, if the last thing on me is going to be my liver, take it to the poll and let it vote.
Now, you also talk about wanting to have oysters to eat. In one of your poems, toward the end, I was like, okay, she's saying I'm getting toward the end of my life. If I can't eat those oysters, and I'm from New Orleans, so you start talking about oysters.
And I said that to my attorney, it was a wonderful, wonderful. She and Mike, and that's the Mike you are. Nobody would know who they are. But if I'm in the hospital or wherever I am in bed, wherever, and we've known each other forever. I've known Gloria longer than I've known anyone on earth now. And if she brings me oysters, which she would, because she knows, you know, Nikki's really sick and she really loves oysters, especially Kumamoto's. If she brings me oysters and I don't sit up to eat them, then she knows, as they say, call it. I'm gone.
So now, are you eating it the New Orleans way, raw with Tabasco sauce and lemon?
I eat it with no Tabascos, but I eat it with lemon and just a hint of salt. And I do eat them raw. Yeah, I mean that's for sure.
You sure you don't have any Louisiana roots in you?
Well, my dad is from Mobile, so who knows?
And the other thing I did want to bring up is your poem about rape. And I'm looking up the name of it right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a line in there where you say, let's see, my hopes will live despite trumpeting sounds of white supremacy. Give me leftovers and I will create a cuisine. Give me scraps and I will create a quilt. And I'm from New Orleans. So when you say, give me leftovers and I will create a cuisine, I start thinking about how gumbo came about.
Of course.
Leftover.
Sure. That's what makes Black Americans, if I may, such a fabulous people, because there is no such thing. You know, Thelonious Monk, and I'm a big Monk fan. Thelonious Monk once said, somebody asked him, you know, because he played funny, dun, 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 and they said to him, you know, I thought you hit a wrong note there, Mr. Monk. And Monk just looked up and said, piano ain't got no wrong notes. And I really always loved it. Something I've always kept in my mind. The piano ain't got no wrong notes. He's right about that. And when we start to talk about the cuisine, there's no leftovers. There's just something that we're putting in. We're making something different. And of course, stew is important. Gumbo is important. Quilts are important. And America, whenever it gets over whatever craziness we're going through, recognizes that America is a quilt. We are a stew. We are made up of lots of different things. And we have to accept that. Not have to accept it. We should be proud to accept it. And I really like it. I like the idea. You like gumbo. I like okra. And it really makes me cry because there's nothing, okra is not indigenous to any of the Americas, to North America at all. So that meant that it came from one of the people who was enslaved, who was bought and sold. And I always saw okra, frankly speaking, as a girl, that when her grandmother, and that's just where I am with my head, when her grandmother recognized that she could no longer protect her granddaughter, she put an okra pod in her hand and closed it and said, don't forget me. And somebody got to America and planted that, got to what we call America and planted it. And okra grew And we love it. We have always, you from New Orleans, we all have things that have okra in it. And I live here in Virginia, and I think the same way about little boys, because I think when the little boy was running, his family was trying to save him. Again, they're all going to their grandmothers, because that's over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house we go. I mean, that's Little Red Riding Hood. That's everything. And again, he was captured. And his grandmother gave him a peanut and said the same, don't forget me. And he came here and he planted that peanut. And some people can call him a fool. Some people can call him a coward. People can call him what they want. But he made a promise to his grandmother. And so when they ran, when the slave said, we're leaving tonight, you know, Harriet is coming. He said, I'm staying. And a lot of people thought he was a fool, but he had made a promise to his grandmother. And I always like to point out that Virginia made a promise to us. He kept his promise. And it's up to Virginia and the United States to keep their promise to us.
Wow. One last question. You talk a lot about Mars, going to Mars. You have a poem with Mars in the title. You have the end of the poem, the religious poem, with Jesus going to Mars. You have another poem with Mars in it. What's up with Mars?
Oh, I love it. It's our sister planet. And again, I have the pleasure of knowing Charles Bolton, who was the head of NASA. And I would say to him, you know, we were talking, you know, like, I really would like to do the space station. I really would like to go. And he would say, Nikki, you know, I can send you into space, but I can't bring you back. And I'd say, you know, Dr. Bolton, why can't you bring me back? He said, because your intestines would move around and you'll die. And I said at one point, you know, I don't know how to tell you this, but one day, because I was born, I'm going to die any damn way. I just as soon die in space. And maybe I will see Jesus, because obviously the tomb was empty. We know that. And right. So he probably said the same thing that I said. These I'm not being bothered with these fools anymore. And so he just went on. And I'm just going to say, well, you know, when I'm gone, just open up the back and let me out. Maybe I'll run into some really interesting people. Who knows?
I promise, this last question. I haven't asked really the big question with all the listeners we want to know, which is the inspiration for writing this book. You've written so many books, and this book, is it a lot of new material? Is it original material? What's your process for putting together your book, Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose?
The original Make Me Rain idea, I wouldn't say, I don't use the term inspiration, but the idea, it's an old jazz tune, but it was never a hit. It wasn't like Take the A-Train or anything like that. It was not a hit. But I thought about that and in listening to it, I listened to anytime I'm in my automobile, I have a jazz station I'm listening to. And I thought, well, if I could be anything, I'd be rain. And so we started with that. And then I thought, well, if I could be rain, why would I be rain? And I'd be rain because I'm in love. So that's going to be how that is. A couple of the things, Black Ink, I published for a book called Black Ink, because it's important. That book, I think, did okay. It's not my book. I did the, the preface for it. But I wanted it to be a part of my book because it's a part of me. Most of these poems and most of these proses are in, they're new. Some of them, like the poem for Malcolm, I did not know Malcolm X, and I'm very sorry I didn't, but I had the incredible pleasure of knowing Betty Shabazz. And so there's things that you write. So when people ask you to do things, you try to do them. Ebony Magazine asked me to do a piece on Obama. They asked a bunch of people. It wasn't just, you know, ask Nikki. It's ask everybody. And I wanted to do a piece on Obama, but I would never have done, and I mean no disrespect here, but I never would do Obama without having done Malcolm, because it's Malcolm that made it possible. And so there are things that you're trying to put together in a book that, if, I don't know how to say that, if a kid picked up the book and just held it, you'd have enough history to learn something, to be, I hope, interested in. I wonder how we got from A to B. And I don't know if I'm making sense, but
oh, I have a 50-year-old daughter, and guess what? She's going to have to read this book.
I hope she enjoys it.
Nikki Giovanni, author of Make Me Rain, Poems and Prose, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure to have you on KAZI Book Review.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast edition of KAZI Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. Subscribe to us under Hopeton Hay Podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and many other sources of podcasts. If you like this interview, be sure to rate it. Rate it a 5. Give us 5 stars. You can follow KAZI Book Review on Twitter under @KAZIBooks. You can also follow us under Facebook under KAZI Book Review with Hopeton Hay. And you can also follow us on Instagram under KAZI_book_review. Thank you once again for listening to the KAZI Book Review podcast.